Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for April 21st. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and back with me from his half-naked vacation in bed is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Wow.
Now, wait a minute. Don't start thinking. I don't want to really have images of you half-naked in that hospital gown.
Okay, that's a story that we don't need to tell here.
But you did send me a picture. Now, granted, it was neck up, but still.
Anyway, hey, it's really cotton sticking out of my nose.
I don't know where the cotton was sticking out from, but it's good to have you back on the show. How you doing?
Well, it's good to be back. Let's see, I'm doing fine. I had surgery on my nose to improve my breathing, and you'll probably not be able to hear my breathing on the air today, so then you'll know it's working.
Oh, he says as he breathes loudly.
Okay, almost never. When you got a nose my size, you know, there's going to be some collateral damage when I breathe.
Right, I bet you say that to all the guys.
I do, in fact.
All right. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Rakuten Eagles infielder Kevin Youkilis, and we're going to discuss the DH rule switch for Interleague, Ballgate 2, and some other topics. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right. Well, last week, John got to play the trivia nasty meanie.
Man, nobody's gotten any of the answers right. Nasty okay. Meanie, I like that.
Well, it was tough. I mean, I was stumped as well. So today we're going to talk about Masahiro Tanaka's streaks. And I'm going to give you just a bunch of numbers and little facts and try to see if you can guess what the significance of those numbers are.
Okay. You talk about trivia meanie, it sounds like.
But some of them are easy. Oh. The first one is not. And the first one, the number is, the current streak is 3 in the regular season and 5 straight, including the regular season and postseason. And this streak is still active.
3. The number of double-digit strikeout games.
Nope, that's a good guess, though. This is pretty simple. If I said the word to you, no days rest, you might get this.
No days rest. 3.
So what did he do on no days rest? But five if you count the postseason.
He came out of the bullpen and pitched.
Correct.
But I don't know what that has to do with him in a Yankee uniform. He hasn't done that there.
He has not done it, but the streak is still alive. He has not done it in New York. This is correct. Okay?
Okay.
Stumped?
Stumped.
Okay. The answer is saves in relief appearances. He has 5 relief appearances as a professional, including the postseason, and he recorded saves in all 5.
Oh, but you said 3.
Well, 3 in the regular season. The other two were this year in the postseason.
Oh, okay. All right. 3, 5. What's the difference? All right. Go ahead.
Okay, the next one. The next streak died in the Yankees' loss to Baltimore, and that streak was 19.
Lost to Baltimore.
The Yankees lost to Baltimore in his second start. He was not the pitcher of record.
Oh. 19.
Yep.
The number of quality starts consecutive.
And actually, the number of quality starts is the same as his games played since his starts since his last loss. His only non-quality start since his last regular season loss was the game 6 in the Japan series.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say about that. 19.
In the regular season. Okay, 19. That is the number of consecutive wins in starts. He started 19 consecutive games and won all of them.
In the regular season.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I mean, yes.
That's nothing else. Okay. This streak was at 28, and it was stopped by the Orioles when the Orioles won this game.
28.
Yep.
Now, I know I know 28 was the overall number that he had won.
In Japan.
In Japan of
consecutive games.
Regular season games that he had
won.
That's correct.
But that streak is now beyond that now. So.
Right. So this 28.
This is a team record.
28 consecutive games that the team won when he was starting.
Bingo!
We got one! I'm the first one to get an answer right.
The next one. All right. The next one, 30.
30.
A streak of 30.
30 consecutive games won in the regular season overall.
Well, actually, winning decisions, yeah.
Winning decisions, yeah. That's what I meant.
That is correct.
Okay.
2 for 4. Very good. Next one. Now, this streak is also alive at 38.
And we just talked about the fact that he had put 30, he has had all these quality starts, but I'm going to say again that he's got 38 consecutive quality starts.
And you would be correct.
Yeah.
38 in a row.
Yep. 38 in a row. Quality starts.
Amazing.
Can you believe that?
Okay, now, two names.
There's more? When is this trivia good? It's called a trivia question, not trivia corner.
This is a trivia midterm.
I hope it's a trivial final exam.
Well, you won't get any of these again. Okay, the last two are two names, and if you can tell, these are the bonus questions. If you can tell me what the relationship between these guys and Masahiro Tanaka's streaks are, we'll give you a cookie or we'll give you something. Okay. Ken Togame,
the pitcher for Seibu Lions.
Right.
Right-handed pitcher.
Right. What's his connection with the Masahiro Tanaka streak?
He, too, is perfect in save opportunities.
No. I can't vouch for that. Okay. Ken Togame was the last winning pitcher in a game lost by Masahiro Tanaka.
That too.
On August 19th, 2012. Okay.
All right. And last bonus.
Okay. And the bonus one is another Cebu pitcher, Enrique Gonzalez.
Enrique Gonzalez?
Yeah. He only pitched one year for Cebu, unique distinction. They brought him in as a reliever, and then they ended up making a starter out of him, and he pitched a couple of games in the starting rotation. And then we never saw him again.
Right.
But during one of those games, he has a unique distinction during one of his starts.
I don't know. Maybe you're leading me. He was the one who got the win against him.
Well, Togame also got the win, but Togame was in relief. Enrique Gonzalez is the last starting pitcher to beat Tanaka.
All right. Well, that's what I meant. But that was it.
That's what you were saying. July 29th, 2012. Okay.
Wow.
So pretty good. You got three out of the five tough ones.
I tell you what I got a headache. That's what I got.
Sorry for that, man.
Woo. All right, well, I'm going to try to be nice with the next trivia question. You said trivia meanie, and you really meant it, didn't you? He's a trivia tormentor.
Yeah, but, well, Tanaka's got all these fun things going on.
And back to our regular scheduled programming.
Oh, was there a podcast?
Perhaps.
Hey, we've got Kevin Euclid coming up. Why don't you talk about Kevin Euclid?
All right, well, on Sunday, just before you got out of the hospital last week, went out to the queue and I talked to Kevin Euclid, the longtime Boston Red Sox star, and he's won World Series and he spent time with the Yankees and the White Sox, and unfortunately he's had a bad back, and that over recent years has statistically made him not such an impactful player, and at least in the big leagues, and because of those injuries I think that's why he ended up coming to play for the Tohoku Rakuten Eagles, and it was a pleasure to sit down and talk to him. And you know, he signed this one-year deal. He's looking like a pretty valuable asset for the Eagles obviously he's not hitting that well yet. He's still hitting in the two teens. But, you know, he looks like a valuable asset to help that team repeat, and that's what they want to do. They spent a lot of money to try to do it. So they were facing the Lotte Marines that day. Lotte rookie Ayumu Ishikawa was on the mound, and the Eagles were able to win that game 3-0. And yeah, he's a three-time All-Star type, icon type guy to bring to Japan to he's that big league player you think is going to do a lot for your team. And it, you know, I heard Naoyuki, and I said it in the interview. I didn't tell him the name of the pitcher, but it was Naoyuki Shimizu was the was doing the color commentary that day, and he's the way he described Euclid standing in the batter's box and just his presence there was kind of. It was interesting, and so that's why you're going to hear me ask him about that and his presence and everything. But again, once these guys get in the batter's box, it's just them trying to fight and battle and deal with all the weirdness and newness and difference in cultures and difference in thinking and in the pitching and the way pitchers attack. But let's go ahead and listen to the interview and see what he says.
All right, our special guest this week is Kevin Euclid. We thank him for joining us on the show.
Good to be here.
All right, first question is, geez, how's the back and how's the impact on your swing and all that stuff? How are you doing physically?
Doing good. Just every day is about getting myself prepared with my back, and luckily it's been very good, and all the exercises that I've been taught through great people in the medical field has allowed me to go out there every day and not worry about it as much, so happy as can be with that.
What do you have to do? What kinds of exercises?
Just a lot of core exercises, and I just basically every day just try to come up with something. I don't have to do everything, as hard as the core exercise I did when I was rehabbing, but just little things here and there.
Okay. Now, tell us, if you would, how you ended up playing in Japan.
I live outside the San Jose area and was looking to latch on with either the Giants or the A's this year, and, there was not a proper fit for me there. After that, there's a bunch of calls from all over, mainly East Coast teams and Midwest. And I have a 7-year-old daughter, soon to be 8, and I have a son that's a year and a half. And we didn't really want to move my daughter again into another school in the States, so she would have been at home. And my family would have been sporadically seeing me over the first 3 months of the season. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the season, they would have to go home, and I'd see them sporadically maybe on the weekend. So we got a call from my agent about coming over to Japan, and the Rakuten Eagles were, wanting me to come. And
I'm glad that you said Rakuten.
Good. Yeah. So they wanted me to come over, and I talked to them a bunch and talked to my wife about the experience and putting our daughter in international school and something different in life just for, basically an 8-month experience. So we talked about it. My wife was fully on board, and she said, let's try it. Let's try something new, and we decided to do that.
Does that mean it's a 1-year gig?
Most likely a 1-year gig. You never know what the future is going to hold, so I can't say definitely, but or definitively, I should say. For me, I take it year to year now, and this could be my last year. So I just go out every day and try to play as hard as I can and enjoy it.
All right. Now, speaking about enjoying, what kind of adjustments are you having to make to enjoy your experience here?
You definitely have a lot of adjustments to make, whether it be on the field or off the field. It's basically to enjoy it. I'm trying to learn the language as much as possible and learn the culture as much as possible. The people are very friendly and very respectful and very proud of the way they work. I said, if McDonald's employees in the United States could see how these McDonald's employees work, we'd all be better off. So it's enjoyable in that sense of just trying to adapt and learn.
Okay, so what about on-the-field adjustments now?
On-the-field adjustments is just the pitching style is very different. You're going to see pitches that, I've seen a 3-0 curveball, I've seen a 3-0 slider. You don't see that ever at the major league level. They're either going to intentionally walk you and basically stand up and do the 4 pitches outside. That's kind of an adjustment. It's basically just seeing that kind of stuff and different counts. They throw different stuff, but also it's just about the style of play too, bunting in different situations and different things like that. And you have to adapt. If you're not going to adapt and make adjustments, you're not going to do too well here.
Okay, now I was told about your hand position in your batting stance, and that at some point you were leaning back a little bit, and they tried to get you to adjust to that, just make adjustments there. How's that going?
It's going good. Basically for me, it's just about, a creature of bad habits, I think, a lot of times. And I was having a bad habit of doing something, whether it be from having surgeries and trying to adjust physically. Yeah, it's not a good habit to have. So, I don't know. I just got out of whack a little bit over the past year or 2 years with my batting stance. But, the swing is a swing. It's just about trying to get your hand positions in the right spot so when you do swing, it's a nice, short, easy swing. So I'm just basically working on that every day.
Now, are you more of a video watcher or a sabermetrics kind of a guy and look at the numbers?
I definitely watch video. I really enjoy just seeing the pitcher and seeing what kind of the movement he has on his pitches. And then I kind of look at the stats, sabermetrics-wise, of pitches in different counts. What are little tendencies here and there? It's kind of hard right now because the pitch we're facing today is a rookie, so there's not a lot of tendencies there. Whereas over years, some of these guys that have pitched for 5 years, you can get really good tendencies on how they pitch and certain pitch counts. So you really over here it helps a lot more, I think, than it helps in the United States too in the Major League Baseball. But I think over here it helps a lot too to see on more off-speed pitches thrown in hitters counts.
Now, how are you learning about the pitchers and who they are and who you've seen before, maybe in the preseason and stuff like that?
We have a hitters meeting every day, and we have basically just sheets and stats to tell what the guy from our scouting department that does a great job of writing down what the guy throws, percentages, how many pitches he out of 10, if he throws 60% fastballs and 20% sliders. So it's good to see that stuff, but sometimes you got to throw that out of the book. You can't just go off that, because one at bat you can get all fastballs, the next at bat you might get all breaking balls. So you can't go off the percentages too much, but I say about sabermetrics that you can live and die by them.
I like the eye test. Now, a former pitcher was the analyst for yesterday's game, and he said on the TV broadcast that your mere presence in the batter's box is intimidating for some of these pitchers. Have you noticed anything about the way they're trying to pitch you?
I don't think so. I think a lot of times I'm just trying to do, like I said, you're amped up to hit a fastball in this count, and you get a splitty or a forkball, and you kind of get a lot of stuff. So I think, but it's not just me. I think they pitch a lot of guys that way, and it's just the style of pitching and the book of Japanese pitching and a style that's a little different. So you get a lot of first pitch breaking balls and stuff, and it's basically, I don't know if it's my presence or anything like that. There's a lot of great hitters here that are doing a lot better than I am here. So I think maybe on TV it looks like that, but I think these guys are going at me.
All right, now what about this team? It had a similar start to last season and then turned things around and made a push. So what do you think this team is going to be like during the season?
We have a good team. As yesterday saw a lot of hits. We have the potential for, good offensive team. And, no matter where you play in the world of baseball, pitching is always going to win championships, and you have to pitch and play defense. So if we pitch and play defense, we got a chance to repeat on last year's success. But if you don't pitch well and you don't play defense well, you're never going to get to that final game.
Well, how much of the hitting of it is mental for you, and how much of it is preparation for you?
Well, everything is mental in sports. When you have a good psyche and a good mental approach every day, I would say it's always easy. You always go to bed and sleep really well when you're hitting 350. when you're hitting 150, you're not really sleeping as well. But I've learned over the years that, especially this early in the season, all it takes is one good month, and you're the best hitter in baseball. And it could take 1 month for the best hitter in baseball to be the worst hitter in baseball. So, the one thing is, you just got to go out every day, every pitch, every cliche you hear in the book, and kind of live to every kind of little thing you can say is just pitch to pitch, play the game, and move on.
All right, last question. Who do you think is going to finish higher in the American League East, the Yankees or the Red Sox?
Oh.
That's the toughest question of the day.
I don't know. I haven't been following all the teams there, so you know, you got the Rays, the Orioles, and Toronto too.
I said finish higher.
Finish higher?
Yeah. This team's going to finish higher.
They're going to be a dead even tie.
There you go. A push.
But yeah, I think it's all pitching. You know, if the pitching holds up for Boston, it's going to be tough to beat them again if their pitching holds up. So, you know, they're the champions, and usually champions that, you know, like the Detroit Tigers that went to World Series 2 years in a row and stuff like that. So pitching holds up. I think, you know, the Red Sox have an advantage right now through their success last year. But the Yankees, you never know. You can't count them out.
All right. We won't count out the Eagles either. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right. Have a great one.
All right, thanks a million, Kevin. It was great to sit down and talk with you. Appreciate it. It was the first time I'd met him, and, you know, maybe that's going to be the case a lot of times this year because we have some new foreign people, and it was also the case with Tom O'Malley when I sat down with him with the Hanshin Tigers. But your thoughts on the talk, what stood out for you?
Well, it was interesting. A few things. I spoke with him briefly prior to opening day, and I said, can you talk? He says, no, meeting. Opening day. We got to discuss opening day and its significance in history or something. I don't know. So whatever it is they met about, I wonder.
Well, they were going to talk about Masahiro's streaks, you know, Tanaka's streaks.
Yeah. Well, who wouldn't be is what I got to ask. Okay. Well, first of all, a few things. I'm kind of interested. You're fond of this question about the stats, this saber metrics versus video, or I'm not certain that it has to be a either or, because there's always a third answer, which is neither.
That's true too.
You know, people just have their plan. I mean, that was the Scott Matheson approach, which is he knows how his arm feels when it's right, and he doesn't really go anywhere else unless things don't feel right. So there's always that one. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting. You know, he works on his form, and he works on his checking what the pitchers are throwing, and has a little bit of a game plan by their tendencies, which is interesting. I mean, you know, you've got to go with what your brain tells you, you know, what works for you, I guess, what you can make sense of. Somebody said recently that, you know, you talk to five different coaches. Who was that who said that? You talk to five different coaches and one of them clicks, five different messages, and they're all telling you basically the same thing, but one of them clicks, and that's how you get the message across. Mm-hmm. And to me, that sounded like that. You know, he's got this is his program, and he's got his program. And I love the description of how he got the batting stance. It's like, I just made a lot of mistakes, and this is where I am.
Oh, well, you know, I guess I didn't take that out of it because I had talked to one of the coaches and I talked to one of the other beat writers, and they were saying that they didn't say whether his hands were too low or too high or whatever it was, but they said that his hands were in the wrong position. And then also they talked about the fact that he was leaning back too far sometimes and couldn't reach certain pitches. And so what he said, what I interpreted him saying was that he'd gotten all these bad habits and he's trying to shake them.
Oh, okay.
But I remember him saying the swing is the swing, you know, and it's not going to change that much. But I think the approach and how you get to the ball sometimes is going to be different. And if his hands were, I was just assuming that his hands were kind of probably too low rather than being too high. But it could have been the other way around, that maybe they were too high.
Well, yeah, the swing is the swing. But again, you have certain mechanics that enable it or hinder it.
Mm.
And you need to be able to be, your hands need to be where you, at a certain point, at a certain time. And as long as they're there, everything else is more or less irrelevant.
Right.
But, I love his batting stance. It reminds me, it brings me back to a former Marines, a great Julio Franco, who had a very similar, you know, he had the bat, except that he held the barrel down, like towards pointed, the handle of the bat was held up way over his head, and the bat head was hanging down and pointed at the ground in front of home plate.
Yeah, and his hands were really high.
And his hands were as high as you could get them, and he didn't have them spread a la Tetsuya Matsumoto the way Euclid does.
Mm.
So, but anyway, yeah, I think, it was interesting to hear him say. I know you mentioned the bit about him staying in the States or not staying in the States. And I kind of, you know, I think there's a take on it. There's my take on that.
Well, let me explain what I mean before.
Okay, go ahead. Why don't you go on to that, and then I'll explain what I wanted to say.
Sure. Yeah, I didn't connect the dots. Let's put it that way. I see what he's talking about in terms of he didn't have a place with the 49ers. He didn't have a place with the Giants. He didn't.
I don't think the 49ers were going to offer him either.
He didn't have a place with the Giants. He didn't have a place with the A's per se. But to move from that to jump all the way to Japan didn't really, I couldn't make the ends meet that way. But I can understand it because he's saying he didn't want to take his daughter out of one school and have her miss him for the whole season, you know, having him be away for the whole season. And this way, they're going to be in one school for the entire year and he's going to be around. So I understand that part, but go ahead.
And for me, it was a case of he's getting these offers. So, well, presumably, it's as he said. I'm sure it is in one way or another. He's getting these offers from other places, and they're back east, or they're in the Midwest, or wherever in the South. And he's, you know, he's played most of his career in the East Coast, and he might be saying, "I've been there, I've done that, but I haven't been to Japan.
Yeah,
I haven't done that. So if I'm going to move, if we're going to do this." Let's really do it. Let's not go halfway.
Yeah, I think that's one aspect. But I was talking to a scout before, and they say, hey, look, you look at his numbers, and they haven't really been worthy of a starting job on an MLB team over the past 3 years. And so I don't think anybody probably offered him an everyday gig where he could go out there and he was going to be either DHing or he's going to be playing in the field. And I think The Eagles are a place where he could get that opportunity to play every day and to contribute and to be productive and to have the opportunity to either play, I think he's playing a lot of first base, but play some infield and get out there and show that he's healthy. And, you know, even he said it, he doesn't know exactly what the future holds. He thinks this is a 1 year, one time gig, but it might go on. We'll have to see. And I think it all depends on his back.
Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, it is a good thing. And of course, you have the added incentive of they're a winning team and they've had, there are some good foreign players playing with the team. Obviously, Andre Jones has drew rave reviews for the impact he had last year, both, you know, among all the players. So I'm sure that was part of the plan. Obviously, he's somebody that everybody knows.
Right.
So, it was interesting. It is complex. I mean, when they first signed Euclid, I was thinking, here's the guy who's followed in Casey McGee's footsteps to where he was the backup third baseman, occasional role-playing infielder with the Yankees to the Eagles. You know, they had essentially the same season. Euclid's season with the Yankees last year was almost identical to McGee's season with the Yankees in 2012. So maybe, I don't know, maybe Euclid's is bound for Florida next year or something.
Well, we just hope he stays healthy. I mean, he was out this past week. He missed some games with a jammed thumb. And we know Casey McGee played every game last year, so he's already behind in that race. You know, I think it's going to take him some time, having had so much success and knowing so much about the major leagues, to come over here and see such differences that he pointed out in the interview, talking about the fact that he's seen 3-0 sliders and 3-0 curveballs and things that he's never seen before in that respect. But yeah, I like what he, you know, one of the quotes that stood out for me in that interview was what he said about McDonald's, because I thought it took me, you know, a second. I'm like, you know, if the people at McDonald's in the States could watch the people here in McDonald's and see how they work and approach the job, we'd all be better off. And I'm thinking, what are you doing at McDonald's? But maybe he's feeding the, Maybe he's feeding the young daughter, you know, hamburgers. I understood
could,
it, but
could be. But I think if the people at McDonald's saw the video of how they do it in Japan, the answer would be, "Not me, baby. No way. I'm not doing that. You tell me to chase a guy down the street yelling, 'Honored customer, here's your penny you left on the counter.'"
Honored customer.
Hurtling carriages, shouting at you as you try to catch your streetcar or something. They'll be going, "No way, not me, babe."
Yeah, that. Yeah, I always like to talk to the foreigners or anybody who's new to Japan and ask them what they notice right away and what impacts them heavily right away. And it was just funny that it was McDonald's, you know, that. That he saw that their approach, but that's their approach to everything. I mean, and especially baseball. And it's not just kind of blasé. It's very calculated and preparation is very important and appearance is very important. It's the same with the baseball, you know, a lot of times. So
the appearance is very important. The appearance of preparation is extremely important.
You can drown in the appearance of preparation.
I know. It's like getting gold. You got your gold star. Okay, day's over. Hey, we lost, but I got a gold star in practice, teacher.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, he's going to get used to the pitching, I think. And if he stays healthy, I really think he's going to be an asset in the second half for the Eagles. What else stood out for you?
Well, that was pretty much it. I was really lucky. I was very glad to actually listen to him because as you said, or as I said, I wasn't able to talk to him the last time. So I'm still looking forward to that conversation.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Well, in terms of the Eagles and the team, I mean, they're not off to a great start, but they didn't get off to a great start last year. They're probably about where they were last year before they turned things on. I think it was right after Interleague that they played really well and started to make a move. And, you know, I'm not really worried about them per se. I think they are what they were last year just about, but that does include the fact that they don't have great starting pitching. They still don't have a great middleman in the bullpen. Mm. And I would say the bullpen is still a question. I think, you know, if it gets down to it in the second half of the season, they might be looking down the bullpen to see if Masahiro Tanaka is warming up.
You have to get a picture of him in the Yankees uniform and post it there.
Or just some video footage and just
something.
You scare the other team with that. But, you talk about the Eagles gives us a quick opportunity to touch on Yuki Matsui. And of course, the young man seems to be struggling and can't really find his release point sometimes, and he looks out of sorts to me. But it's amazing. It's like I tell you, this fake baseball that they play in the preseason when there's really no chips on the table is a lot different from what happens in the regular season. In the preseason, people were swinging at pitches and pitches that they're not swinging at now, and he looked like a usable and viable player in the preseason. And then as soon as the money got put out on the table, we see a different dude on the mound. And
I'm seeing the same guy, but I'm seeing a guy who's like going, what I thought everything was working fine. And his tempo is terrible. He's like, he's completely out of sorts with what's supposed to be working and what it's supposed to be working.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the release point was the thing that I saw in his last game. He just couldn't seem to figure out and find a place to let go of the ball where he was going to hit certain spots. And you know what he reminds me of, and you're probably going to disagree, but Mitch Williams. Remember him? That left-handed, the crazy-haired left-handed guy with the Philadelphia Phillies. And you know, he would let go of the ball and his legs are flying all over the place. He's stumbling on the mound and looks like he's going to fall and bowl over the batter just about the way he's coming off the mound. Matsui doesn't look that bad, but he's still, you know, he's letting go of the ball and he's finishing in a weird spot and his leg is all over the place. And yeah, it's similar to the way he was finishing in the preseason, but I think he's trying to overthrow some pitches now because guys, like I said, aren't swinging at the same pitches that they were swinging at before. And he just, like I said, he looks out of sorts. It's a different ball game for him now.
I think so. Basically what I've seen is that he looks uncomfortable. And he looks uncomfortable, you know, in the preseason it was like, you know, I got guys out in high school doing like this, and now I'm getting guys out in the pros doing like this. And his pitches were moving. I mean, he had fine movement location in the preseason, but now when they've hit, you know, it's really appears to have upset his game plan, you know, his little internal clock about the way things are supposed to work. And I would say every professional pitcher, every time you move up a level, you have to deal with this. That the pitches, the patterns, the way you worked, it's not that your pitches aren't going to be successful. It's just how you thought about them and how you put them together are no longer as viable as they were. But what you have to realize is that, you know, you had the quality. You have to get back to the fact that you have to believe in yourself, and you have to regain that. And I remember talking to Trey Hillman about Tomoya Yagi as a rookie, in that he was a guy who basically could get – they realized he had really good stuff when he was an amateur, and they could get people out. But what happened was he wasn't able to get people out with the consistency that he had as an amateur, and so he felt that he started – he was a pitch-to-contact guy. And so he started working out of the zone. and then everything went to, you know, just went to hell for him. Yeah. So that's what I see happening with Matsui a little bit. It's like, you know, that was a good pitch, and how come it got hit so hard? Or how come it didn't go exactly where I wanted? But all these things are interrelated, and he's got to sort of step back. You know, the situation is not so dissimilar to a foreign player with a lot of experience coming to Japan and getting a bigger strike zone and getting unusual pitching patterns. You know, you have to realize that what you do does work, but you have to find out, you know, you have to learn to shut out the noise or realize that the competition is different. Things are different. And you just have to, you know, get back to basics and find, you know, and sort of like, okay, this works, this isn't working, so let's just forget about it or something.
Yeah, well, the Lotte Marines got frustrated with Yuki Karakawa, and they shipped him down to the minors. And I kind of was expecting Matsui to get that announcement, but I think it's just like what I said in the preseason, I don't think they think that he can learn that much down there. They want him to right the ship up here on the top team. And, you know, their staff, their rotation is okay. I don't know that they have anybody who can step in and replace him anyway. So I think he's going to get the opportunity to try. I think they're just going to try to correct things. But, it was very concerning to see him start the other day, and I'm worried about him. Let's put it
His first game was not that bad.
No, it wasn't.
Right. So it's basically – for me, it's less an issue with his mechanics, although his pitching coach Yoshinori Sato did mention that his mechanics are, you know, need some fine tuning. Fine tuning.
Yeah,
some fairly fine tuning in a kind of broad sense of the word.
Yeah.
So he needs to make a lot of small adjustments with his mechanics. Okay, so that's going to take time. And Sato's been very successful doing that with a number of pitchers over the years, so I have confidence in that. But I think the real adjustment is the mental one, which is get used to the fact that your best stuff is sometimes going to get hit, and get used to this is the way it is. And I think so that's the adjustment he has to make. And the decision whether to keep him on the first team or send him down to the minors is whether keeping him here, he'll be able to manage that pressure and move forward, or the pressure will destroy him and set him back. So that's basically the decision. It shouldn't be a decision about whether we've got somebody to replace him. The decision is whether if a month and a half in the minors will be less damaging than a month and a half of getting his head beat in the Pacific League.
Well, I mean, he's not really getting hit all that hard. In 14 and a third innings, the problem that I see, the biggest issue, is the walks. He's got 15 of those.
Right.
He's got 17 strikeouts. He's got a couple wild pitches. He's given up 13 hits, but the problem is all those base runners.
Right. Well, that's the thing is he didn't walk people before.
Yeah, it's
and all of a sudden he's trying to stay. I think he's trying to stay out of the zone. He's really nervous about throwing in the zone.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that develops. Now, today, a two-way player, Shohei Ohtani of the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters, probably pitched one of his better games, although his manager didn't say that. But
well, that's because we remember what we see last, which is him loading the bases with no outs.
And then leaving.
Yeah, and giving up two runs and leaving, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like what he did today, but this thing that's happened that I think is probably due to his popularity, or maybe in part because of his popularity, we had an announcement this week by MPB that the DH rule would be switched for interleague in that at the Central League parts, which the Central League does not use the DH rule, that the pitchers would not bat and the DHs would be in place. And then in the Pacific League, which is similar to the American League in the major leagues, where the pitchers do not bat and there's a DH rule, we would have the pitchers batting. And at first when I heard it, I'm like, this is crazy. And Mark Jackson, he's the coach of the Golden State Warriors in basketball in the NBA. Mm. He used to be one of my favorite color commentators. And he used to have this phrase called fake hustle. And I thought, as soon as I heard this, I'm thinking, this is fake creativity. Because they're trying to do something and make it look like they're doing something when they're actually doing nothing. And it looks like they're doing nothing, and we can see through it. It's just, it's fake.
Fake hustle. Wow. They're like hustle, but it wasn't by Van McCoy or something.
Well, you know, you run after the fact, or you do something after the fact, that doesn't affect the play, or something like that.
Well, it's a harmless gimmick. it's something, I think, what does it matter? Well, if you're a Central League team, you get to see guys DH. If you're a Pacific League team, you get to see your pitchers bat. It's a nice little change in that respect. For the fans, it matters. I mean, for us, what does it matter whether they, as reporters, it doesn't matter to us where they use the DH.
Yeah, well, I mean, like,
but for the fans, yeah, a little bit.
At first, I thought it's kind of crazy, or is it crazy?
Yeah.
Is it crazy out of the box? But it's not really out of the box. It's just they're just switching things around. But the thing is, if indeed it is for Ohtani and the fans will get to see him, and what I really want them to do, and what they should do, and they meaning the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters, is do what everyone wants to see, and that's have him start a game and bat third or fourth in the lineup. That's what we really want to see. And if
then we can see Hiroshi Masui batting third or fourth in the lineup, bring in a succession of pinch hitters because your pitchers now have to bat.
In a park, well, I mean, he'd be batting anyway.
He'd be batting, but when he leaves the game, then the pitchers bat.
No, they don't because they're not. There's no DH. The pitchers bat, but I mean, it's not like they weren't going to have to bat before anyway. It's still the same situation. It's just that they're doing it in a different park.
I understand that, but let's say Michelle Abreu is healthy, and you put Ohtani in the game, and let's say he pitches six innings. Well, that's three innings where Abreu is at best a pinch hitter. You can use him once. You can't use him as a DH because there ain't no more DH. If you don't use the DH at the start, you don't get to go back to it.
Yeah, but I mean, the pitchers are going to have to bat anyway in interleague.
Well, in interleague,
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I'm talking about in interleague if they use him as the starter at home, they use him as a starter and bat him third or fourth. Yeah.
Sure. Oh, sure. Yeah. I don't think they're going to. I wouldn't bat him third or fourth. I might bat him a little farther down in the lineup.
Well,
but
that's what we want to see. They don't really have a. They don't. I mean, Miranda has been good, but I mean, they don't have an outstanding. Well, Nakata and Miranda. I mean, they're big power hitters, but I mean, Ohtani could bat third, I think, in that situation in that lineup. I don't think that's a problem.
I think he could too.
Yeah,
he's terrific. I mean, he actually drew two walks this week.
On paper. I'm kidding.
Yeah, drew pictures of what four balls mean. I think from a young age as a pitcher, he was told that walks are bad, so that's how he approaches his plate appearances.
Yeah, so anyway, I think, you know, the moment I heard it, I thought it was stupid, and like you, I thought it was some kind of gimmick, and obviously I'm thinking, okay, well, if the fans of Hokkaido get to see him bat and pitch in the same game like that, that would be cool. I thought that would be really cool. And that would probably be some must-see TV. Otherwise, it really doesn't really make sense. And we all know what the DH does, so that doesn't do anything for the Central League parks. They're not going to get all excited. And, you know, it's fake creativity. I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's just different.
Oh, yeah, it's just something. I mean, they didn't have anything better to do with their little meetings. So they said, hey, I got an idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the difference between seeing your pitcher strike out on TV or live in person?
It was like the George Carlin sketch where he says, you know, there was a guy at work one day at the novelty company and says, hey, wait, I got an idea, fake dog juke. Hey, great idea, Phil, I'll call a printer. That's our board of directors was sitting around one day and they decided, you know, switch the DHs. Hey, great idea. All right, let's go have lunch.
Well, you know, and they did have Ohtani DH a few games the other day, and I don't know if that helped him conserve some energy and maybe led to the fact that he pitched fairly well today and pitched into the sixth inning or the seventh inning?
Seventh.
Yeah, into the seventh inning.
He did get one out in the seventh. Okay. Yeah. I think that was the pattern. He's going to probably play right field two games and then DH and then be off for 3 days. While he pitches.
Does that really save a lot of energy on his part for him to stand around and instead of standing around in the outfield, sit on the bench?
I'd have to ask him. I wouldn't know.
I just don't think it's that big a deal.
Well, that's because we're young and healthy. Well, we're not like some 19-year-old.
Yeah, he's still not 20 yet. Like I said, I of all the things I remember about being 20, being tired was not one of them. And I wouldn't say my energy was boundless, but it certainly was. It was bountiful. How's that?
That's a good use of words starting with letter B.
But not bad.
I thought it was quite commendable.
But yeah, you know, it makes me harken back to the preseason last year when he was fielding those balls.
What was that all about? How many times has he played in the infield?
Yeah, with that right arm tucked behind, safely behind his back, you know, and they love that right arm. You know, just DHing him is going to save his arm. Is that really what we're saying here, people? I mean, I don't know, but again, he did seem to pitch a little bit better, so maybe the schedule after a year and a half is really starting to grind on him and it's wearing him out. Well, we'll have to see. I'm not convinced, but maybe he just caught the Eagles on a bad day today. You know, he didn't strike out that many, so maybe
he looked. I only saw a bit of the game.
Yeah,
but, I mean, he had some good pitches going, but he does. I mean, he has some wonderful stuff. You know, he's got the change, and he's got the fastball, and he's got that. He can throw that curveball for strikes, and which is probably what I love the most is that when you're sitting on a, you know, 96 mile an hour fastball and you see that 75 mile an hour curve going and drop into your shoes. It's sort of a challenge.
Well, he didn't waste any curveballs. He had a confrontation with Andrew Jones today where he threw several fastballs. I think he got three swings and misses on fastballs against Andrew Jones. It was a really, if you get a chance to see that, maybe it'll be.
Was that the one where the bases were loaded?
I think
that. Because I saw a curveball in there.
Well, I mean,
the second strike was a curveball.
No, okay, well, maybe it wasn't. I don't remember, but I did see that. So, anyway, now you weren't around last week to talk about Ballgate 2. I'm calling it Ballgate 2, pulling the wool over.
Okay. So, well, you can call it what you'd like.
Well, that's because Mizuno came out and said it was because of the woolen yarn that it had that dried out in a factory in China. Doesn't this sound like somebody made something up somewhere and got in front of a mic with this story? The factory in China, is this the first time you use the factory? Where do you usually get the yarn? Is this the first time this has happened? Have you changed the yarn? Where are you getting the yarn for the next batch of balls that you're going to throw? I wanted to be at that press conference. I'll tell you that.
No, you don't, because it's one nonsensical answer piled on top of another one.
Right.
They keep piling nonsensical answers like the layers of a baseball.
Yeah, they're
then they'll figure, you know, then we put a cover on it. Nobody's going to see what's inside. Everyone's going to forget about it.
Yeah, you stack up all these excuses on top of each other. They might one day equal one good excuse. I don't know. So Mizuno this past week came out and said that the balls were livelier because dried out yarn from factories in China are causing the balls to carry better. And I'm, as I understand, they did carry on or carry out some tests prior to the start of the season, and the balls tested fine before the season started.
Okay. Well, I can't vouch for. But I know you and Patrick, and I did. I want to thank Patrick for stepping in for me. You and Patrick discussed who was responsible for this, and I don't want to go too far into that. I think there was maybe one comment, as you mentioned, Shimoda, the former Secretary General, as being the guy in charge of it. He was the guy who took the fall for it. And what I understand is the guy who actually. This makes much more sense in the big scheme of things. The guy who actually pushed it forward and was the driving force was the guy who was never mentioned. In fact, they went to a great length in the original press conference at which he was sitting at the table not to mention that he was the one. It only came out later that he was one of the people who knew it was going on, and that was Ihara, who is the guy who pushed through the ball change last year, was then put in charge of the chicken coop. And
yummy.
Surprise, we have another problem with the baseballs, you know, now that Mr. Reliability is in charge.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really surprise me. Is it Mizuno's fault? It could be, but Mizuno has a bad track record with this ball anyway, because last year's ball, which was a very good ball, I think we all agree, it was a very good ball, it was very fair.
Yeah.
It played fair. And the reason that ball was necessary was because Mizuno essentially agreed to produce baseballs that it couldn't produce when Kato first agreed to change the balls. They set the target for the coefficient of restitution at the very bottom limit of allowable tolerance, you know, make them as dead as possible.
Right.
But if you set it at that, just the normal variation in the ball, almost half of them are going to be below that standard and almost half of them are going to be above that standard.
Well, you say take the fall. Shimoda-san took the fall, but I would say he's more like a stumble. He didn't go that far, right? He's still working.
True, but he was the guy who was essentially blamed for the move when it was his subordinate who basically did everything.
Right. So anyway, what I understand is, and my concern with the ball is it's changing now annually almost. And they're going to use these balls. They said there was at least 120,000 balls that a 3-month supply. And after that, what are they going to do? Is there going to be another ball change? Because now we're talking about, it's very uncomfortable for the players and, you know, pitchers and hitters both alike. But I mean, we keep having Hanshin and the Swallows like play all these ridiculously high scoring games. So maybe they like it, but it makes NPB look ragtag and small time. And I don't like it. And I want somebody to fall. And I'm not buying this yarn thing and the wool and all this other stuff. You can try to pull the wool over somebody else's eyes, buddy. I'm not going for it.
John Gibson, don't play that. Okay. Well, I'm certainly. To me, the whole fiasco is they tried to do something right and they ended up worse than they started. You know, they tried to, Kato's idea, and I think for him, the greatest thing he did in his tenure, I mean, there were some things he did that were really good, but the greatest thing he did was get all of NPB using the same ball, because the problem was it looked bad when they had to use a different ball every week. Well, geez, look what we got. We got a different ball every year, every 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're right.
That's not, that's not a fault with the plan, with the idea, but it's definitely a fault with the execution. You know, they trusted Mizuno to do what they said, which was the reason they needed a low impact baseball to begin with was because Mizuno was never to be trusted in the last 20 years producing baseballs that were over specs. They produced lively balls because a couple of teams said, well, we want more home runs in our game. So Mizuno would juice up the balls and say, here are your balls. And this went on, but this was rampant through the 90s, the end of the 90s and the last decade, the decade after that, to 2010. And that's why they needed a low impact ball, because Mizuno couldn't be trusted. So let's give Mizuno a contract to produce balls, and all of a sudden Mizuno is part of this scheme to increase, make the balls livelier. And then the balls are suddenly livelier again. It's like, and I'm with you. It doesn't, I mean, their explanation may be the truth, but Mizuno has zero credibility from a long time ago.
And it's getting worse.
Wow. Oh, they're getting negative credibility in John Gibson's eyes.
Yeah. Well, all right, well, we'll see how this keeps. I'm sure it will continue to unfold, ha, 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 and we will see how this goes with the yarn.
Maybe it'll dry up and blow away.
All right, one quick note. The Yomiuri Giants cracked open a door that hopefully will stay open and bring us some players who probably can't speak a lot of English, but will probably bring a lot of excitement to NPB, and that's some Cuban players with the signing of Frederic Cepeda, which we anticipate the signing will be soon because it wasn't official, but they reached an agreement with him because Cuba's actually had a shift in its policy and will let some of its players go overseas to play. And I don't know, maybe it's because everybody's defecting. Really good players are defecting, and they still want them to play for the national team. I mean, can you imagine Yasiel Puig playing on the national team with Yoenis Cespedes and some other Cuban players who have defected? So if they can bring those guys back, I think it'd be a plus for their country.
And well, I think Cepeda is at the end of his career, so it's not that big a deal. Of course, we have had Cuban players play before in NPB, as you remember, with the Chinichi Dragons.
Yeah.
But again, also guys at the end of their career, and really, what they want. They want this is a great situation for everybody. One is the Cuban guys get to experience a different kind of competition from what they're getting in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Two, they're bringing in a lot of money. They're bringing in a lot of money.
Yeah.
And tax money for Cuba. Three, they get to play abroad, and they get to play on the national team as well, which is a great honor. I was reading the story of Yasiel Puig's defection, and it's basically saying that they get paid $17 a month in Cuba. So this is the contract is for $1.5 million.
Yeah.
So $22 million, including the signing bonus. So that's something that is not available. And hopefully, if some of the bigger stars come, the money will be even more, and they'll still be able to go back to Cuba. They'll still be able, until things thaw with the United States, they'll still have a degree of freedom that some of the, oddly enough, that the major league Cubans who can't go home will face. So it's an interesting situation.
Yeah, should be nice. Should add a little bit more flavor to MPB, and we're looking forward to getting those players. And I don't know how many of them are going to sit down with us on JBW, but hopefully we can get somebody who can speak English and probably sit down with them and do an interview. Be good.
Yeah.
All right. We don't have any questions this week, but if you have any, please send them by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com.
And we want to hear you speak to the world. So please send us your MP3s if possible. Let's hear your voices sound out and be heard.
Yep, keep them under a minute and let us know where you're from, and go ahead and send it to us. And you can also leave us a note on the Facebook page. leave us some comments there. I've been trying to be more active there. In fact, I let people know that Kevin Youkilis was going to be the guest for this week's show. All right, so thank you very much for listening to the end. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Okay, talk to you next week.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.